Oh, I can only hope for the best that we actually get a little bit of moisture in those places that are looking forward to it. Welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. I am excited to have a full day of things to talk about with everybody listening today. So thanks for being a part of the show. And we're also going to want to touch on that weather because it's going to cool off. Today's a little bit warm, but we're looking forward to the next couple of days. So what we're seeing is that our weather today, we're going to hit a high of about 88. And for those of you who are standing around outside, yeah, it's a little warm. Now, additionally, we stand a chance of about 50% showers tonight and going into tomorrow. After we have that high of 88 today, we're going to cool down into the lower 60s with the hope tomorrow of hitting just over 70 degrees. Well, we'll see where that lands us, but it's going to be nice to have maybe a little bit of a cool down for a day or two if it brings some showers along. I know there's some areas that would take, you know, say a half inch of rain right now. Not everybody, but a good chunk of us. So as we work our way through the week, we're going to see moderate temperatures until we get out to Friday, Saturday. We'll get back over the 80 degree mark with once again another warm Sunday coming at us. So weather today is brought to you by Progressive Ag. Those folks at Progressive Ag are doing everything they can to be your risk management specialists in agriculture. They also work in crop insurance. And if you need to have a conversation with someone, they would be the people that you want to do that with. So thank you for Progressive Ag being a part of our day to day. Well, I have a whole list of announcements, ideas, and so much more for everyone. One of the things that I wanted to highlight is if you didn't hear about it last week, Thursday, when Angie Johnson from NDSU was on with us. Angie is the Farm and Safety Ranch Specialist, and Angie talked about a July 19th event for rural firefighters. It is called the Rural Firefighters Delivering Ag Safety and Health, RF-, and it's free. It's going to have a limited audience of only 25 participants, and that will be coming up this Saturday, July 19th from 8 to 4 at Aminia. So it's just north of Castleton, about 7-8 miles. Pretty easy to get there. This is a train-the-trainer approach with curriculum that comes from the National Fire Protection Agency standards. So there'll be an introduction to ag emergencies, pre-planning and mapping with farms and using farmmapper.org, also then farm hazard analysis with saferfarm.org, and farm first aid. So if you are in a local fire department, especially our smaller departments, and you are looking for ways to bring new information to your department and your fire department members, here's a great event for you. Again, it's a limited class size. It is free. There are take-home materials. And if you have an interest in it, please drop me an email, ag@flagfamily.com. I would be happy to share that with you. And for any reason that you have a question today, whether it's about weather, I'll do my best to be our forecaster for the day, or other topics, you can reach us on the Weather and Ag in Focus phone line brought to you by JLA Insurance, 701-293-9000. My email address is ag@flagfamily.com. And I think our streams are off and running, so you can be watching us today on Facebook and YouTube and Acres TV. Those are listed under WDAY, Weather and Ag in Focus. Acres TV, if you're not familiar, it's the Netflix for agriculture brought to you by the Hefty Seed Company out of Baltic, South Dakota. For those of you who will be attending their event on July 31st in Baltic, I'll see you there. Already getting things packed up and ready to take with me when I get down there. Should be an exciting event. Now, more dates to keep in mind. Project Safe Send is entering its second week. This is brought to you by the North Dakota Department of Agriculture. What it does is allows a safe place for unwanted or partially used pesticides to be dropped off. You can take them to a Project Safe Send site. They will be at a North Dakota DOT facility within these communities on the mornings that the date is designated for you from 8 to noon. This is not for paints, oils, antifreezes, etc., but it is for things that fall under the Federal Insecticide, Rodenticide, and Fungicide Act, meaning pesticides, fungicides, things that you use in the yard, whether it's weed killer, bug killers, etc. It's time to get rid of those things, and you can do that with Project Safe Send. Today, they are in Minot. Tomorrow, our listeners in Tioga have the opportunity to shed those items. Killdeer on Wednesday, Dickinson Thursday, and Beulah on Friday. Next week will be the central and eastern parts of North Dakota. Keep that in mind. As we talked about the weather just a little while ago, there are conditions favorable for white mold. I've had a number of questions from folks who are looking at spraying right now, trying to take control of white mold instances, whether it's in dry edible beans, soybeans, sunflowers, etc. And there's a product out there from Summit Agro USA called Regev HBX, hybrid fungicide specially formulated for use with those soybean growers, brings to you a couple of different things. First of all, it is a curative control. It brings your active ingredient of difenoconazole, but it's working with a tea tree extract. Well, this gives you a unique set of terpenes that enable the fungicide to disrupt cell membranes and then also inhibit spore germination, ion transport, and mycelial growth. So those are a few things to keep in mind. If you're looking for a fungicide on the market in the white mold realm, look for Regev. And again, that is from Summit Agro. Okay, headlines have been going on, and I got this one twice over the weekend, so I wanted to talk about it today on air. And what I got from a number of folks was that, okay, over in Duluth, which has largely been a grain terminal port for many years, that it's been announced CHS, which is a grain terminal at the port at Duluth, and it's owned by CHS out of the Minneapolis area, that they're going to be closing that large grain elevator terminal. So what does this mean? Now, CHS has not given a reason for the closure beyond citing that shifts in how grain flows through the supply chain have changed. And a concern that some folks have brought up is, will it just become an eyesore? Instead of tearing it down, will it just stay there on the shore and start to erode over time? I don't have the answer to that, but to answer the question of why do we no longer need to use that particular loading facility over at Duluth Superior happens for a couple of reasons. For many years, a lot of grain moved over to Duluth, especially from this area, and it was moved by truck, and then it was loaded onto those barges and moved out through the east. But we've had some changes in literally the flow of where our grain goes. North Dakota, in particular, much of our harvested grain goes by rail to the west. We go out through the ports on the west coast to more of the Asian markets. We've also seen an uptick for those folks in like southern Minnesota. That grain now flows down the Mississippi River on barge traffic. And so there's been a divergence of how this grain is moved. You know, one thing that's also changing for us here in North Dakota is now that we have two soybean crush plants and we have more ethanol plants that are online over the last couple of years in both states, North Dakota and Minnesota, we aren't shipping out the grain that we once did. We might be shipping meal, we might be shipping oil, but those things have now changed because we're not sending out that initial commodity product, that ingredient of soybeans or corn like we once did. So yes, this is a change. Does it change our pricing structure for the farmer? Here in North Dakota, this is just my personal feeling, my gut reaction. It's probably not going to change our pricing structure very much. Could it affect those closer to that Duluth area? It may, but Duluth is not also considered a heavy agricultural area either. So there's probably some things to think about on both sides of this, what it's going to work for or against. But I do understand the concern that nobody wants to see that very large facility standing still, not being used in the future, and probably just falling apart in the end. So we hope not to see that. Hopefully CHS makes a good decision about it. So this facility, by the way, has 500 towering concrete silos, and they previously loaded about 40 cargo ships with grain per year. Just a few stats on that situation. All right, lots of things that are going on. Today is the first day of a large auction sale down in Adrian, Minnesota. Kerr Auctions has their two rings running as we speak. A lot of livestock handling equipment as well as cropping system equipment, whether you're looking for a tractor, a sprayer, a combine, and maybe you're looking for corral panels, horse trailers, as well as the fact that I think a lot of folks are always looking for attachments for their skid steers. So if you haven't checked it out, go to kerrauction.com and look at what's happening on their website today. Now, I also have a guest joining me today, and I'm looking forward to our discussion, as always, with our cybersecurity superhero. That is Chris Sherman with TechSub Heart Farm. So Chris and I have a whole list of things to talk about. We always do. We never really run shy. And we are going to do that after we take the time to hear our market update from the American Ag Network. And when we return, again, we'll be visiting with Chris Sherman with Tech Support Farm. Stick around, send your questions, as always, to the JLA insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. I would like to think that since I need to have control today and I can use all the little sound items, that I could figure out where my very favorite one is. But I don't know if I got the weather one to play right. Some days this little thing doesn't want to give me what I'm looking for. And currently I'm looking for the barn door. Oh, there it is. Will you moo? No, it won't moo for me. So I'll have to fake it like the Fisher Price one. Moo. There's the door for you. We haven't heard that in a while. But what we have today is our guest joining us. And he's a favorite returning because our conversations are always so very good. And that is Chris Sherman with Tech Support Farm. He's our cybersecurity superhero. Chris, okay, when we started talking this morning about what should we mention, one of the things that I thought about was oftentimes you have folks, especially farmers that are doing, say, a farm-to-consumer beef business.
Yes.
They might be using something like Square to do their payments. Is that safe? Should we be protecting that a little more than we are?
Absolutely. Okay. So essentially, if you're using credit card processing, there are a couple of, standards that you have to follow. I think it's called PCI and DSS compliance that is really important. And essentially, your credit card processor will handle most of that. But in regards to you, there's definitely best practices in order to keep that stuff protected because it is vulnerable.
Okay. What are some of those best practices that we should be doing? Because remember, I'm the kid who said a few months ago, oh, but Apple always tells us you just can't hack them.
Wow.
And I think of Square very associated with Apple and iPhones. Okay.
So Apple, and I think we've talked about this on air, but Apple doesn't seem to have as many hacks, and that's simply because there aren't as many of them on the market, right?
Okay.
We don't hear about, Lamborghinis and Porsches getting stolen nearly as much as Fords and Chevys, and the reason why is because of the proliferation in the market.
Okay.
So they're definitely hackable, and it's kind of foolhardy for us to think that they're not. In regards to, credit card processing, there's a couple things. Number one, you always want to make sure that you're using a business account.
Okay? Right.
You cannot be using personal Venmos. You can't be using personal, PayPal accounts or those types of things. If you're using Zelle and that sort of thing, always have a commercial account because it does the tracking for you and it does the monitoring for you. Whereas inside of a personal account, it definitely doesn't have that reporting. The other thing is that always make sure that your device is secured. And for the listening audience, we would estimate probably, I'd say 50% of our clients are running around trying to use their cell phones without any sort of biometric passwords or anything like that. You have to lock that stuff up.
Okay. I am biometric. It's got to look at my eyes to make sure it's me, which, by the way, funny side note. If I am wearing my glasses, it recognizes me, or my sunglasses. If I am not wearing my contacts and I just try to look at it without my contacts in, it will not let me in.
It's interesting too, because in facial recognition, we've actually seen where siblings who look too much alike, they can get into each other's devices as well. So
good twin, evil twin.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's not necessarily the best, but it's better than nothing.
Okay.
Making sure you have a passcode is very, very important. And it's the theory. Like, you wouldn't leave your wallet sitting at the bar, simply because it's far too accessible.
Well, that's very true. And one of the things, if I am buying from a vendor at a location, whether it's a farmer's market, whether it is, again, if we're talking about, buying beef locally from someone, and I do have a Venmo business account, so that's helpful. But folks got to remember that if you're on a public Wi-Fi,
yes,
that can make a big difference too.
Make sure that you are using your Wi-Fi or a hotspot or something like that. Do not be doing financial transactions via public Wi-Fis.
Good to know.
Yeah. Your data on your phone is secure in the sense that, it's better than a public Wi-Fi. At the same time, If you have a hotspot on your phone or your computer or whatever, you can use that as well, because that is a private network and that should be secured.
Okay. Encryption readers. Okay. What is that? Because I just see folks use the little square it plugs into your phone, et cetera. Is that already encrypted
that
in some way?
That is encrypted, yes.
Okay.
However, the problem is that, you know, let's say that, you know, you get that customer whose credit card is worn out and things just. And you find yourself having to enter in the information itself.
Sure.
There's two things with that. Number one is the fact that the credit card company will charge you extra for a manual entry, which is mind-blowing to me, simply because you swipe it and it's going to cost you less than it is to sit there and enter it all in by hand. You're more work and more money. So, but the second problem is that if you manually enter it into, you know, your credit card reader, that information is not encrypted.
Okay. One of the things though, that we've been talking about this from the point of view that I, the farmer, am the vendor, but what about when it's the reverse and I'm the customer? And I'm doing these. Is there any way that I can make sure I'm more secure on some of these transactions?
Don't send your information via email. Whatever you do, yes. Okay. That is like number one. I mean, if there, you know, obviously there are certain instances that you can't avoid it. But especially if you realize that you're sending it to, you know, a standard, you know, consumer grade email, whether it's Gmail, Yahoo, you know, whatever the case is.
Sure.
You really don't want to be sending your information that way, because those emails are not encrypted.
Well, again, we've had this conversation, how we can improve that. And again, set up a farm business name would be the easiest thing to do. Most folks could do that.
And then you have your farm account. And or, you
when
know,
when you
and,
say
I
farm
mean,
account, are we talking banking or email farm account?
We're talking both, actually.
Both. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And then, you know, with that banking account, then you set up your credit card processing and that and so on and so forth. But, you know, the number one thing is don't ever let your, you know, customers handle your device, right?
True.
You want to swipe it and they can sign and that's about it. Outside of that, you want to make sure you're using your network and not somebody else's.
Okay.
You want to make sure that you're using the tap to pay or the swipe. Try to avoid at all costs the manual entry. The other thing is that if you are sending out invoices, always, you know, QuickBooks has the pay online feature.
Yeah.
Great idea. Use it. Okay. Run with it.
So you feel like that's a bit more secure.
Yes.
I'll be honest. I have some leeriness about PayPal. I feel like PayPal gets hacked all the time. Or is it more secure than I think?
I think it is a little bit more secure than you think.
Okay.
But at the same time, PayPal has this tendency of you can send money and not necessarily, you know, credit card swiping.
Sure. Well, that is true.
And that's where you have the problem, is because you'll get the spam, you know, spammers that are trying to send you invoices and that sort of thing, and people end up paying them.
So what about in the instance where, like, for instance, with my business credit card, if I do an online transaction, it tells me that it sends like I don't want to call it a fake number, but it sends a different number in the transaction. So it's actually hiding my real number.
Correct.
And so if that's an option.
Yes.
That's an option you should be following.
The other thing is that turn on the notifications. You know, I know that, you know, and some people are really bad at this, but some of us shut off all of our notifications to everything.
Yeah.
Number one, turn it on for your credit card processing. So if you do have Stripe or you do have, you know, Zelle or Venmo or something like that, and a transaction goes through and it wasn't you, you will automatically get a notification about it. That is very helpful. The other thing is, your bank has the fraud alert through, you know, all of, I know they're annoying, and I know that nobody wants to sit there for 5 minutes and review the last three transactions and blah, 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 blah. It's annoying.
But that's okay.
But
that
it is okay.
Us.
Yes.
Because that's happened where I have been traveling and those notifications have come up because I was doing a transaction in a different state and my husband was shopping online and then it says, oh, something seems bad here.
Correct.
Now, banking wise, because we bank at a small town bank, my fraud protection there, her name is Donna. She's the head teller. She'll call.
Yeah. Yes. But unfortunately, we don't always have Donnas in our life. Right.
She's the best one.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We have many more things to talk about and ask Chris, because again, Chris Sherman with Tech Support Farm is our cybersecurity superhero. Stay tuned. Make sure to send us the questions that you have. I can pick those up during our news break here at 1:30. And you can reach me, ag@flagfamily.com, or call us on the JLA insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. Well, it's a busy day here at Weather and Ag in Focus. First of all, we are getting so much closer to harvest with our Here We Grow 20 acres of wheat that we are custom farming near Gardner, North Dakota. Mark Wagner at ND Estate Services, well, he has made it his job to take a complicated process and make it very simple for you and your family when it comes to avoiding probate, protecting guardianship, saving taxes, and so much more. Thanks to Mark and ND Estate Services for being a sponsor for us with our Here We Grow project this year. And then also, thank you to Thor Buildings. I mean, honestly, these guys have probably got the best spot right now for you if you need to replace buildings post-storm, because they would talk to you about their post-frame construction. So if you're looking for the ultimate in post-frame construction, look no further than Thor Buildings. We thank them for being a part of our project this year. So here in studio, I have with me Chris Sherman. As I mentioned, he is our cybersecurity superhero, and we're talking about all things payments. Okay, you mentioned something in our notes, Chris, that I didn't know what this was, or at least at first glance. And I, as a small business, I have to be PCI compliant, but I don't know what that means. And I am a small business. I do have my own. I don't really take electronic payments. I'm very fond of checks at this point in my world. But if I needed to, what does that mean?
Okay, first off, yeah, no, I'm very fond of checks too. I'm not sure why. It is just so much, yeah.
Still like getting mail like we did when we were little kids, like
exactly.
Pen pals.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm sitting there and I'm stapling check stubs back to a bill, and it's like, why am I doing this? You know, the data guy should not be doing this. But anyway, no. Okay, so PCI compliance is the Payment Card Industry Data Security Standards Act or system.
Okay.
Essentially what it is it's the standard by which merchants are required to protect their customers' data and the transactions and the responsibilities that they have as they're processing, you know, payments. So PCI DSS, really a large part of it is handled by the person or the company that's doing your card processing. So Stripe, PayPal, Square,
okay.
Clover, any of those are going to be managing most of it. But your responsibility is on your end. So things like don't store your customers' data. Don't jot it down and you know, keep it in a notebook. You know, you can't be using public Wi-Fis. You can't be,
Even when I'm using Venmo, because there is a vendor that I go back and forth with, and we both use Venmo, but I never remember their Venmo name. I have to always look them up, probably because you say it's good security not to write that down. I'm saying I'm just not smart enough to remember what it is.
Okay, so in the world of Venmo, Cash App, or any of these other ones,
yes,
you know, there have been instances where, you know, people have sent money to the wrong username.
That's why you're supposed to verify with the phone numbers, right?
Yeah. Well, guess what?
It's gone. Okay, we got to keep that in mind.
And one day, we might be lucky enough to be the lucky recipient of somebody else's payment. And
I don't know. I'm waiting for that Nigerian prince to send me some cash, too. I see the need to protect this. I think about things that we buy, particularly online, from a farm perspective, for parts.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes, you know, just last week we talked with the e-commerce gal, Jasmine Kelly from RDO. And she mentioned, you know, that they want to make that secure. But it's not. If we need something for an older piece of equipment, maybe we are looking for a cheaper price, then we're going to places that are online to do those buying. And that's where we think about PayPal and Venmo and so forth. And we got to keep all that stuff straight so we don't cause ourselves problems.
So not to segue too terribly much,
please,
but
go ahead.
You are absolutely on about the whole online parts purchasing idea, right? And a great case in point is fake websites that crop up that look like the legitimate websites.
Yes. Okay. And
so, you know, and they look like the real website. And a great example is years ago, and I suppose this was probably 10, 12 years ago, I went to purchase a whole bundle of power tools. Thought it was a great deal.
Oh,
looked like
sure.
It was on the DeWalt website.
Yep.
It was not DeWalt. And, you know, a couple thousand dollars later, and I'm scrambling to find out. And sure enough, they just transpose some letters inside of the domain name. And but the point in that is that not only is it dangerous that you're interacting with somebody who is, you know, falsifying being a vendor, but at the same time, you're giving them your financial information in order to facilitate a transaction.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're not beholden to charging you for the total amount that they said that they would. Mm-hmm. They can take you for whatever they want.
Now, again, when you talked earlier about making sure that you have your notifications enabled, because I've had this happen. I was trying to order parts online and my credit card company was the one who came back and said, we think this is pretty wonky.
Yep.
You probably shouldn't do it.
Yes.
So that's an instance where we do have to pay attention to our notifications.
But again, think about, you know, when we talk about like that sense of urgency, right? After the Duray show, now all of a sudden you have equipment manufacturer or, you know, websites cropping up in, you know, in that particular area or grain bins or you know, irrigation system, whatever it is. You know, if you find yourself looking at a deal that might be too good to be true, before you go putting in your credit card information and putting in that down payment, pause.
So, you know, as you
mentioned, there's a website called Site Checker. If you Google it, and you can enter in the domain name, and they will evaluate the website and look for ransomware, spyware. Then they will also, you know, give you kind of like a rating score of how safe the website is as well.
So two things. One is post derecho, especially we need to be particularly diligent about what's legitimate and what's not.
Correct.
Because of where we live, our zip codes are the geofencing. We are being targeted for more scams in this region right now.
It's no different than the floods in Texas.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Someone is looking to scam us in some way in our time of need. Maybe not as needy as what happened in Texas, that's for sure. But you know, I don't know that I could name a farmer who did not have some sort of significant damage in the derecho and tornadoes.
Yes.
Then the second thing that brings to mind is you and I were talking about before we got started today, John Deere is inviting people to hack them. Can you explain that? I think this is great.
University of Iowa, and I think it was Iowa. Let me just quick check my notes here.
Sure.
It was Iowa, and it's University of Iowa, and John Deere put together a program called the Cyber Tractor Challenge, and essentially it's been going on for a year or two.
Okay.
And they take students from the university system, and they put them to work to try to hack into you know, combines, planters, you know, any sort of piece of equipment. And they're looking for vulnerabilities. And it's a great opportunity to identify those and gives John Deere and other manufacturers a chance to fix that and patch that before it actually gets to market. But at the same time, what they're also doing is they're identifying who would be good candidates for the cybersecurity field, especially in relation to ag.
Speaking of when you talk about that, they're inviting someone to actually hack them. I think a huge part of this is similar to what they're doing down at Madison, South Dakota, at Dakota State.
Yep.
Because they have kids doing that regularly, going out into the black web, and they have partnered with equipment manufacturers to try to find ways to break into what a farmer is doing.
Yes.
And we probably need to see more of that. And can you do that with tech support farm? Could you literally, with one of your clients, try to hack into them and find their weaknesses? Or should they just use their fence check assessment? Or what's the way for them to find out where their vulnerabilities are?
So fence check is a great way to identify what the vulnerabilities are of your farm. We can do what's known as pen testing or network penetration testing. We can do vulnerability scans inside of the network, but we're not going to go and hack into your network ourselves. The network pen tests are a good way to do that, but ultimately, we typically do those for, you know, for insurance companies if that's what they're requiring, or regulatory bodies if they're looking for a test like that. But from our perspective, we think that, you know, using standard protocols to secure your networks and your devices and that sort of thing is probably going to be your best bet. For manufacturers like John Deere or Case IH or anything like that, that's where you want to see those white hackers or white hat hackers coming into play.
Well, when I think about how these white hat hackers work, I think about future jobs for kids. I'm in the midst of writing a presentation that I'm going to give on July 28th in Illinois to a group, and talking about, you know, the future of ag and what we look for future job opportunities.
Yep.
I think cybersecurity and farming is very much overlooked.
Oh, it is. It is hugely overlooked, and the opportunities for creativity and growth are endless. The one gentleman that you and I had spoke with earlier has a device that he developed specifically for ag.
Yes.
And it's a box that sits inside of your network, and it acts as though it becomes a pheromone trap or a honeypot. Absolutely creative, and it's a great way to protect your network and listen to what's going on inside of your network, and it's absolutely no outside intrusion, and it's specifically locked within the device. And if that individual or that hacker gets trapped inside there, now we have all their information, and we can deal with them accordingly.
When you think about all of the things on the farm or the ranch or in our agribusiness that use cyber in some way, shape, or form, whether it's our phones, our PCs, the apps that we use, et cetera, is it fair to say that we should look at more farms having their own IT person? Or if they're not going to have an IT person, have you, who's going to follow up with them as tech support farm, maybe you could even train their IT person to try to keep things from being hacked, et cetera. I mean, is it becoming that to that point where we have to really think about that's an additional staffing person for some farms?
I think that the broad swath of American farms couldn't sustain a full-time IT person.
Okay.
But we are at a point where an IT person or an IT, an outsourced IT person is absolutely
critical.
Necessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Because there's so many things that we have to think about.
And it's very important to clarify that there's a big difference between your IT person who just takes care of, make sure that everything is running and up to date,
yeah,
as opposed to your security provider.
Yes, because I live in Hunter.
Yep.
My internet is handled by Polar Communications out of Park River, North Dakota.
Interesting.
And for me, the IT from them is not going to give me cybersecurity.
No.
And I think we often just equate that with, but it's our local mom and pop shop. Everything will be okay.
Yeah.
Not really.
And CM Polar isn't even necessarily IT because they're an ISP.
They are the provider.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. A good example, especially in our area, would be Midnight Communications, I think.
Okay.
They would be considered both a provider and an IT company.
And the difference here that we see for you as Tech Support Farm, you have the on-farm background. So if I talk to you about my bin site or what I have for, controllers on my sprayer, my combine, people talk about RTK with their tillage, et cetera. You get that language.
Correct.
That's very different than if I just try to call up anybody else to do my security for me.
The other thing is that we're not only security, but we are IT.
Yeah.
So if you do have, trouble with your software, or even if, you can't seem to get your spreadsheet to work the way you want it to, you can't get on the Zoom call and you're embarrassed, just shoot us a text. We can jump in and help you out. Absolutely. Well,
there's none of this stuff is slowing down.
No.
I mean, I don't care what part of ag we're in. More and more of us are serving on boards, being a part of legislation, commodity groups, et cetera, where we have to be on those Zoom calls and we have to trade information. And right now, because we do all those things, we are trying to keep up with more of our banking and our insurance, et cetera. And doing that through cyber is how we're going to get it done.
Yes.
And if we're not protecting it, we're going to lose it.
100%. Yes. And even then, it's not even farms now are have additional side businesses. You can be an applicator, you can be, a seed dealer, it might be that you just manage the volunteer ambulance in the area. You might, all of these different things, you sell insurance. All of these things, out of all of that, there's three of those that I can think of that have regulatory compliance issues.
Okay. When we come back, one of the things when you said that about a side hustle for a lot of farms, I've seen more farmers buy tile plows and drones in the last 12 to 18 months than I ever have. And let's talk about how we should protect those.
Okay.
When we return, stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back. Oh, let's launch right into the weather. That's the thing we like to make sure is going well. And today we're going to hit that high of 88 degrees. We might already be there outside. I'm indoors. I can't tell you yet. We're looking forward to a little bit of rainfall this evening. We've got a 50% chance overnight to get some showers, and I think they look pretty widespread. Hopefully they land in your neighborhood and they're more than the five drops that hit my windows earlier this morning. Tomorrow we cool off and we're going to stay that way through Thursday with temperatures around the low 70s mark. As we get towards the weekend, Friday, Saturday, we'll pick up. We'll be over 80, hitting 85 by next Sunday. And the thing I like the most is every night this week, our temperatures are below 60 degrees. Good sleeping weather. Now, if we wanted our corn to grow at a really rapid pace, we'd like to see that temperature bumped up a little bit, but it depends which side of that argument you might be on. Thanks again to Progressive Ag, risk management specialists, for providing our weather updates today. Our discussion today has been pretty engaging with our cybersecurity superhero, and that is Chris Sherman of Tech Support Farm. And before we stopped the last little discussion, Chris, I asked you about drones and tile plows, because in the last 12 to 18 months, I have had more and more farmers picking up at, you know, that piece of equipment as their side hustle. And when I say drones, I'm talking about drones that are spraying fields.
Yep.
A lot of fungicide, a lot of pasture as well. Or they're using drones like TerraClear does, where it's a software program that flies the field, GPS locates where the rocks are, and then they send a skid steer out to pick the rock from the field for the farm. When I'm a farmer running those types of things, because the tile plow would be my own business, the TerraClear is probably a franchise, what are some things I should be setting up and doing to protect me and then the neighboring farmer I'm working with? Money-wise, and I think about data files.
Yep.
Because we have to share some of those data files back and forth.
I would say that there's a couple things. Number one, with the idea of the drain tile.
Yes. Well,
you know, a large portion of that is GPS tracking.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because nobody wants to have to go and find a break in the middle of the field and sit there and dig a 40-foot hole trying to figure out where in the world it is.
I guarantee you nobody wants to do that.
No. I have been there. We have done that. That is a miserable afternoon.
Yes, it is.
And then the farmer is all frustrated because there's a giant, you know, crater in the middle of his field for, an 8-inch tile line. Anyways, with that being said, protecting the data that you have that stored on and then backing it up, that is absolutely critical, yes. Especially for tile plows. But tile plows are not autonomous, and they're nowhere near as high tech, mm-hmm. as some of this other, infrastructure that we build out or the equipment that we use. In regards to the drones,
yeah.
I think that it's really, really imperative that we're monitoring, the security that we use in our networks, simply because you're running your drone off of another device, right?
Right.
And it's the communication back and forth. It's the access to that drone and the information that it has.
Sure.
Whether it's other, hostile nation states, spying on your fields and seeing what your yields are looking like and that sort of thing, or, land infrastructure and all of that. Because, unfortunately, we are definitely under surveillance from other countries.
Okay, that was reiterated not that long ago, because after all of the missile strikes in Iran,
yes,
they flat out said, the country of Iran said, we plan cyber attacks and we are going to target agriculture.
Yep.
So it we know that it's happening.
Absolutely.
Before we get to the end of the day, a couple of headline things I wanted to make sure that we touched on today as well. When you look at our acreage reports right now, our soybeans are going to remain the number one crop in North Dakota based on planted acres for 2025. That we're at 6.6 million acres, and that is equal to last year's total. Spring wheat was on the decline by 350,000 acres from last year, so we're right around 5 million. Corn acreage is indeed at a record high of 4.2 million acres. Over in Minnesota, the planted acreage holds at 8.5 million for corn, 7 million for soybeans, and their spring wheat totals about 1.2 million acres, down slightly. Interesting enough, for North Dakota, we're down in dry edible beans right now. Edible beans would be compiled of the pinks, reds, black turtles, navies, etc., great northern, canelli beans, things that we raise up here that winds up in your soups, stews, and packaged foods. Potatoes are down slightly, but we are up for barley, durum oats, sugar beets, and hay. Canola, even though we're down 14% from last year, it's still the third highest planted acreage in our state history. Also, the national company Del Monte, the vegetable producers, or canners, I should say, they have indeed filed for bankruptcy and restructuring. That does not mean that we're going to see the Del Monte brand disappear. It just means that they're restructuring financially. Their packaged food business with their wide selection of fruits and vegetables will not disappear. It also will not affect their international business. Chris, thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And we look forward to tomorrow. Tomorrow, we're going to be joined by our interns from My Ag Data to hear how their summer went. See you then.